Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, how well-versed are you in what is reality? Can you just go on and on about it? Well, I think we get into some crazy places when we try to define reality. And it's actually not just reality, but it's our awareness of reality. And who are we in this reality? Who are we in this universe of consciousness? And how do we get there? Probably that's the biggest question is, how do we get there? Who are we to exist consciously in this universe? And so this subject has attracted a lot of scientists to explore our consciousness and our minds, all aspects of the way we think and why we think. And to help us do that is the author of a new book. And she's been on our show many times, but this book is new, and it's called The Electromagnetic Brain, EM Field Theories on the Nature of Consciousness. So we are again speaking with Shelley Joy. Shelley, welcome back to Energy Stew. I'm so glad that we could climb into this very deep subject.
Well, thank you for inviting me again. I'm happy to be able to talk.
And you got deep just because you started experimenting in your early days with substances that altered your mind. And then you realized, wait a minute, I had the same experience when I was in my 20s of altering my mind and realizing that reality isn't necessarily the way it's structured in our day-to-day lives. It can be observed in alternate ways. And you had those experiences. So where did they take
you? Yeah, well, I was actually a very conservative young person, fascinated by science. And in fact, my neighbor was a CIA radio officer and got me interested at an early age in ham radio because he had a huge antenna. And he actually gave me my exams and I became an amateur radio. But back then there was no internet, of course. And it was so cool to listen to a shortwave radio receiver and listen to people who were in faraway countries and to hear them, they're coming over invisible waves. I mean, I was also really into science fiction, and the idea of radio waves was to me phenomenal. And electricity, I knew, brought so many things to us, like light bulbs and television. So I studied science in high school, and I really wanted to understand how televisions worked. And radio also. And, you know, and also I kind of wanted to be an inventor and invent a time machine or something like that, like I'd been fascinated by in science fiction movies. So I excelled in science. And for my senior year in high school, I built a linear ion accelerator, kind of a very neat kind of a device that glowed along Pyrex tube with a lot of voltage from a Van de Graaff generator. That's one of those things you might have seen that puts out huge sparks. And I had worked that summer in a laboratory near Washington, DC. I had a National Science Foundation grant to do that for high school students. And so the scientists were all excited about helping me build this linear ion accelerator, which they actually machined the parts and they, you know, they gave me some ideas. Anyway, I won a science fair for that. And that helped me get accepted to MIT and Rice University. But my parents were moving to Texas at the time. So I went to Rice, which is in Houston. And I started out on a physics scholarship. I didn't have to pay any tuition. They actually paid me to go to school, which was cool. So my first experience, you mentioned drugs, I think. My first experience was with coffee. And, you know, but in the study room at Rice, they had a huge urn of coffee every night and lots of sugar in cups. And we had so much homework. You can't imagine a lot of homework. So, you know, I was taking physics and chemistry and calculus and history and German and English thrown in. So I had a lot of studying, and I discovered that if you drink coffee, you stay awake. So I learned to drink a lot of coffee. First, I hated the taste, but after a while, I just got used to it. And I loaded it with sugar, and I got wired until about 4 a.m. every morning studying. So that was my my beginning of finding that chemistry really does work with your brain somehow and your consciousness. So I studied physics for 1 year and then got fascinated by mathematics. I was a mathematician for a year in school. And then I finally went into electrical engineering because I was already interested in radio waves. And so I studied computers and communication theory and techniques and devices as an engineer. And it was a 5-year program. So it's a long program to get an electrical engineering degree. So the very last summer, I had married. I married rather young. I was 20 when I married. And we went to California that summer when I was 21. And my I was very much affiliated with the art department because my spouse was an artist in the art fine arts program. So all of our friends were artists. And of course, this was back in the hippie days. So I was kind of a black sheep, an engineer hippie. And they talked me into taking LSD on the beach in California at night. And I had been reading in Life and Time magazine how many people said they saw God when they took LSD. And I thought, well, that would be very interesting in terms of a scientific and emotional, you know, I mean, I just wanted to see what they were talking about firsthand, because the scientific approach is to test everything yourself, not to take things on just people's words. So anyway, we took some very strong, what's called Owsley acid, little yellow tablets. And to make sure that I would see God, I took 3 of them. Kind of probably not a good idea.
High risk.
But it turns out it changed my life. I did come back. You know, there's a point when you're traveling with entheogens that your mind is so far out there, you're thinking, will I ever get back and reboot myself into the normal person I thought I was, you know?
I remember being that way myself.
It seemed to last.
And then I would think, yeah, maybe I should, I should send a postcard.
And to yourself somehow.
Yeah.
Well, this was at night, and so there were only 2 other people with me, and we sort of wandered away from each other. So I was alone much of the time, and the whole cosmos seemed to open up. And of course, some of your listeners will have experienced this, maybe many, I don't know. And even cannabis can widen your awareness to some extent, but definitely psychedelics or entheogens like LSD opens up entirely new dimensions of experience. And I experienced that there were other living, but they probably weren't biological, but they were living consciousnesses. There were centers of awareness that I could see somehow with a different kind of a sense. I could sense them there and feel them. And then I realized that if I could see them, that they could see me, you know. And I got a little bit scared for a while. I think everyone goes through a period during a really strong trip like that of being afraid, because these things are almost like psychic sharks, some of them. So you're there swimming in this ocean of consciousness. But I finally, you know, came down the next morning, and We used some cannabis to make it a little bit easier and smoother. It helped me fall in love with cannabis too at the time. But the result was, you know, my advisor back in the engineering school had been saying, what do you want to do research on? He assumed I was going on for a PhD to do research in electrical engineering that most people at Rice were. It's a pretty advanced program for people who want to research. And I wasn't sure what I wanted to do research on, but after the experience of consciousness, all these unknown things I had never knew were there that I experienced directly, I knew they were real. In fact, I sort of scoff at people who say that dreams are not real. You know, how can you say that dreams are not real? Because you experience them every night, you know. It just means that your definition of reality is kind of warped, I think.
Limited.
But reality for a lot of people is basically only things you can see and feel and, you know, touch and stuff like that, material things. And unfortunately, our modern material, our sciences, physics, chemistry, and even biology are very materialistic. They pretty much only talk about and research things that they can measure in space and time. However, with quantum mechanics, it came along about a little over 100 years ago. We've learned that there are other dimensions in space and time. And what do I mean by we learned? Well, doing these particle experiments, quantum physicists, like in the huge CERN collider in Europe, and we have a few colliders here, cyclotrons and things, they do experiments and they are able to observe how particles, tiny, tiny fundamental particles, can be exploded by banging them into one another. And all kinds of unusual small particles come out with different trajectories. And they use mathematics to map the trajectories so that they can predict the next experiment and start to understand how all the math interrelates. Well, the particle mechanics showed them that there were other dimensions than space and time, because some particles came off at 90 degree angles to particles that they knew about. And whenever you have a something that's 90 degrees in physics to something else, it's another dimension. So for instance, there's three dimensions in space. You know, we look at the little diagrams of space on a piece of paper or your computer screen, they'll show three axes with arrows, 90 degrees to one another. It looks like the corner of a square, and one axis is X, Y, and Z usually. And each one is 90 degrees to one another, but that's three separate dimensions. Then the other dimension we know is time. And even though physicists don't even know what time is, they don't know what gravity is either, but they know how to measure it and name it. And they have some idea of how it works and interacts with particles. So the dimension of time is a fourth dimension. And then mystics throughout history have said there are other dimensions when you either take drugs like ayahuasca or psilocybin or, you know, mushrooms, or in the American Southwest, they took peyote. You, as a human being, can start to perceive other, what they call higher dimensions. And I believe these dimensions are probably the same dimensions that the physicists are talking about in quantum mechanics. So how many of these other dimensions might exist? Well, there's a new theory in physics, it's about 20 or 30 years old, that uses the mathematics to map all of the tiny quantum experiments they do with the colliders. And it's called string theory. And a newer version is called M theory. String theory says there's 11 dimensions in the universe, 11 different dimensions. And M theory says there might be 12. And then there's some really eccentric physicists who say there's even more than that. But they say why we really can't measure these dimensions is because they're very, very, very tiny. And when things are really, really tiny, you can't see them with your instruments. That's why we had to wait for microscopes to be able to see the amoeba and the tiny organisms that helped us break through in medicine and things. We still can only see, we really can't even see an electron yet, because that's like 10 to the minus 15th meters, very small. But according to quantum mechanics, things go much, much smaller. There is an end to space. There's two ends to space, actually. One end is like the outer limit of the universe, our cosmos, which is expanding at the speed of light. So it's getting bigger, but beyond that, they don't know what's there because there's no space. Then when you go inward, down inside toward the center of any point, you go down to like 10 to the minus 15th, which is about the size of a proton. And then to the minus 15th, minus 16th meter, the electron is almost the smallest thing we can measure. But we can go down to 10 to the minus 35, 10 to the minus 35th. And that's called the Planck length. And that was determined by a man named Planck back in 1899 in a great paper he wrote that actually began quantum physics. And below the Planck length, there is no space and no time. The mathematics proves it. So what actually exists down there?
Excuse me, Shelley, why are we talking about a size that might be millions of times smaller than an electron? Is it, I mean, aren't we—
than millions smaller. a million is 10 to the ninth. No, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, it's, this is like 10 to the minus 35. So it's the smallest, so it's the bottom of space in our universe.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine within how small
that,
it is.
If you think of a beach ball or a sphere, a model, and the diameter is 10 to the minus 35, that means that there's no space within the beach ball, within the point. And that is where these other dimensions are. And according to mystics and some modern physicists and mathematicians who I talk about in my book, that is where these other dimensions may be encountered. And that the mystics of the world and people who take drugs, say, can somehow sense some of these, what's going on in these other dimensions.
Well, can I just say that
scientists have tried to name, yeah.
It seems that it's a portal that these other realities exist in that comes through this tiniest imaginable point that opens up into a bigger than our universe, a vast space that's endless.
Yeah,
it's endless because it's out of time and space. It's not part of time and space.
Exactly. But you know, this has been intuited by many people, including most people know about Alice in Wonderland, right? So what happened to Alice in Wonderland? Well, she took some kind of a drug or a mushroom, I think, and she shrunk down smaller and smaller and smaller until she saw all kinds of crazy things going on. In a way, Lewis Carroll intuited the same thing. And maybe he meditated, you know, or maybe he took some kind of a, you know, drug out there on the heath, who knows. But that's the theory anyway, that there's this universe of space and time comes out of all those other dimensions, and all those other dimensions do exist. And our science, our material science, has been ignoring them, except in quantum mechanics and the mathematics of quantum mechanics. But they haven't been trying to understand what's called the ontology of them. In other words, what does it mean? What does these other dimensions, you know, mean for us? How can we relate to them other than in mathematics?
Well, maybe it's really all the information is held. And I think we'll get into that as we move forward. But because there are so many scientists that you talk about in the book, that each one made a huge contribution to this step by step. And that's why I love your book so much, because it comes from this place that we're introducing now about reality that has two places. One is the place of the physical space-time world that we are aware of on a normal basis, but can go down as deep as to this 10 to the minus 33 or 35 in size, which is beyond our imagination how small that is. And yet beyond yes. it is a big part of the world that we live in, like in our from our dream states and from our psychedelic states, that where we come into the experience of it. But actually, I think part of this journey is to understand maybe we're really in it all the time and we just don't know it. And so we are living with a blueprint, a structure of consciousness that allows us to live in a material world and enjoy and appreciate a material world. But the origin is what we're looking at here. What's the origin of the awareness that we live with? And maybe it's something that's constantly with us. Maybe it's the way our minds think in the first place. And we just don't know it because science hasn't really yes. figured out how our minds work. Right?
Well, I think we live in a very exciting time because I do believe my book will help a little bit, but even if my book didn't exist, there are other signs that there are a growing number of scientifically trained people who are becoming more interested in consciousness, especially since drugs are being sort of decriminalized and de-anathematized. They're not such a horrible thing that if you take it, you ruin your career. You know, years ago, if you were going for the Supreme Court justice and you had smoked a little bit of cannabis, you know, you forget about it. Well, in science, it'd be the same thing pretty much. So after Timothy Leary and his crowd, they weren't even allowed to research psychedelics. And it's still just starting to open up where they're being able to investigate things like MDMA and psilocybin. But I think the combination of technology, computers, and a real more basic understanding of consciousness as energy, as modulated information-packed energy in other dimensions, I think that combination is going to cause an explosion of understanding in our society and in the world. And we're almost like in the dark ages right now, but I think we're on the cusp of suddenly turning on the light, you know, like Edison's first light bulb. And there's so many ways that we could use this understanding to amplify human brain power and communicate with other dimensions of reality, maybe other species of consciousness that live maybe not on other planets, or maybe, but maybe they live in other dimensions, maybe in the center of our Earth. I've always been fascinated with our geology of our Earth, because way down below us, if you sit meditating, I try to, I imagine way below my butt, way down there toward the center of the Earth, there's a region that glows with glowing molten energy, the core of the planet. And it's enormous energies going on there. It probably looks like the sun, you know, when you look at pictures of the sun with everything going on. I just read a book from a scientist. He claims that the sun is alive. And he explains how, it's a magazine called the Journal of Consciousness Studies, just came out. It's the main theme of this month's book. Is the sun alive? And I believe it is. And I believe that the center of our Earth is alive also.
Right. In other words,
we are like little webcams.
Is the sun conscious is actually what we're talking about. And
well, yeah, I have to say consciousness and life, I think, are synonymous. It's a real prejudice to say that life is only in these little meat bodies made out of water and carbon atoms. That's where life is and everything else is dead. Well, the other thing is, I think dead and death, that's a superstition too, because nothing in the universe suddenly vanishes. I mean, it may vanish to our eyes, but it's can be seen elsewhere with other instruments. Nothing, you know, we're not like these railroad tracks that end at a bumper car spot and there's no more tracks. Nothing right, we're, in the universe learning, suddenly we're, ends. That's superstition.
We're learning. Yeah, we're learning more and more about that. But now we're getting near the end of the show.
Transformation.
Yes, we are. We have a lot more to talk about because we're only introducing this idea of reality, of how life exists through consciousness and endlessly. But there's so much in your book from so many scientists who had so many contributions to make to this. And I'd like to explore a lot of that with you in the next show to look at step by step how we're coming into learning more about ourselves and this universe, vast multidimensional universe we live in. So Shelley Joy, your book is Electromagnetic Brain, EM Field Theories on the Nature of Consciousness. It's a masterpiece. I've loved every moment of it. And I'm just digesting more and more because there's so much in it to digest about who we are, how our minds work, how we thought they worked, and how we're learning better how they work. And because of all the scientists. So hopefully you'll come back very shortly and we'll do a subsequent show about this, okay?
Sure, maybe we need, yeah. A couple of more shows would be fine with me.
Yeah, I'd love to talk with you and this is so great. So is there, I mean, they can buy the book. Are there any websites or blogs or anything that they can find?
Oh, yes. My website is shelleyjoy.net, N-E-T. And my name's Shelley with an I, S-H-E-L-L-I-J-O-Y-E at, no, .net. Shelleyjoy.net. And you can actually write me emails. Yeah, from my website has an email message thing. And I'm happy to answer anybody's emails. I do answer a lot of emails.
Well, let's.
And I have a lot of recordings of interviews and books. So, yeah.
Oh, great.
Looking forward to our next conversation.
Yeah.
Where we can get into the nitty gritty.
Good. Yeah. I'm so excited about it. Thanks so much for being back on Energy Stew, Shelley.
Thank you.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening.